Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
As the earth keeps going by turning itself toward the light, day after day, we have no choice, despite all forms of etiquette and training, but to keep turning toward what we feel is real. Otherwise, we become cold little planets spinning in the dark. Very often when I am confused or depressed for a long period of time, it is because I have stopped turning toward the light of what feels real. At times like this, I have to break the darkness of my spinning with a very small and simple step that often seems huge and difficult because I have been spinning in on myself. I have to practice being real by saying what I feel, not just once, but continually. I have struggled my whole life with this. Like most of us, I learned to survive by withholding what feels real. When events happen, when someone says or does something that hurts me, I have learned to absorb the hit and pretend that nothing has changed, that everything is the same. But when I do this, my energy is used up in maintaining the pretense that nothing has happened, and I begin to spin coldly in the dark. It is so simple and yet so brave to say that we are hurt when we are hurt, that we are sad when we are sad, that we are scared when we are scared. In very direct and daily ways, this energy of realness changes situations because the immediate expression of our truth releases light and warmth that influences the life we are a part of. This is the way our spirit shines. Good evening again, everyone, and welcome again. So I want to talk a little bit about stories and storytelling. What is a story? If I asked everyone in the room, everyone here in the Zendo, everyone online, if I asked everyone that question, what is a story? We would likely get a number of very familiar descriptions, very familiar definitions, such as these official definitions from the dictionary. Number one, a story is an account of imaginary or real people and events told for entertainment. Number two, an account of past events in someone's life or in the evolution of something. Those sound pretty familiar, pretty standard definitions of what a story is. But consider these also definitions from the dictionary. A story is also, number one, a false statement or explanation, a lie. Number two, a piece of gossip or a rumor, unverified. A particular person's representation of the facts of a matter, especially as given in self-defense or in defending one's own story. And so as human beings, I think we've become very good, very adept, very talented storytellers. We have amazing storytelling capabilities. We have amazing storytelling traditions as human beings. I don't think there's a single culture anywhere in the world, a single group of people anywhere in the world, or a place in the world that does not have its own storytelling traditions. Some of them are very vivid, very beautiful. We've evolved. We have evolved with this rather amazing capacity to create stories about so many different aspects of our human existence. We create stories about our history, about our traditions. We create stories as a way of teaching. And this storytelling can be very beautiful. It can be an essential art form for us as human beings. Storytelling can help us to know our history, to know our human capacities, what we are capable of doing, what we are capable of achieving. But there's also another side or another aspect to our storytelling, because human beings also have evolved this capacity within us to create stories, to create narratives in order to circumvent or to avoid reality, to avoid what is real, to cover up reality, the reality of our lives, the reality of our existence. And because of our attachments, our craving, our aversion, and our ignorance of right view, of right understanding of reality as it is, we create stories. We create stories so that we can avoid what is real. We do this quite often. We create these narratives, we create these stories in our minds in order to kind of avoid, to run away from seeing reality as it is, the reality of our human existence. And we also create stories and we create narratives to desperately hold on to or to convince ourselves of what we believe to be real, what we have been conditioned to think is real, or what we desperately want to be real. We desperately want things to be a certain way in our lives, and we create these narratives to convince ourselves of this reality that we've created. And we should remember that ignorance, this word ignorance, which pops up a lot in Buddhist psychology and Buddhist cosmology, ignorance is not simply a not knowing what is real, but it is also a willful looking or turning away. A willful looking or turning away from what is real, from reality as it truly is. I think everyone here has heard this line at one time or another. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. This is from a poem by Sir Walter Scott, 1808 poem called The Marmion. And so the question is, do we practice to deceive? In what ways might we all practice to deceive ourselves? We often create stories, or we grasp onto stories, we latch onto stories so that we can willfully look away and not bear witness to what is frightening, to what is painful, to what is difficult in our lives, to what is challenging, to what is uncomfortable in our lives. We create these stories to circumvent those realities and to willfully look away from what is real. And likewise, we create or we grasp onto stories that provide perhaps a more pleasant narrative for us, one that what is perhaps the truth or reality of life or our human existence. We create these stories and we grasp onto them because they feel more comfortable to us. They feel more pleasant. And so we kind of start to latch onto these stories and feel like I prefer this version of reality. I like this story better than what is real. And so we hide ourselves away behind these stories, kind of like a young child covering their eyes to hide. Have you ever seen this? If you play with a young child, you play hide and seek, and the child will simply cover their eyes. They're right in front of you, but they'll cover their eyes because they feel if they can't see you, then of course you can't see them. They must be invisible to you, and this is their way of hiding. And we do much the same thing when we create these stories and these narratives. It's like we're covering our eyes, and we feel like if I can't see reality, if I can't really look at it, if I avoid looking at it, then reality can't catch up with me. These uncomfortable things that are real and true at times in our lives, they can't touch me because they can't find me. I'm hiding behind this story. Roshi, our teacher, used to share with us that whenever he would have the opportunity to speak to a graduating class of students, some of you remember this, Roshi would say, whenever I have an opportunity to speak to a graduating class of students, I would say to them, with all respect to all of your teachers and all of your educators who are wonderful, but with all respect, they've told you, you've been told that you have been prepared to enter the real world. This is what you've been preparing for in school. You've been preparing to enter the real world. And Roshi would say, that is a lie. You are not preparing to enter the real world. You've been prepared to enter the world that we have created. This story of the real world that we have created and has been given to you for you to believe that this is the reality that you're entering. Buddhism is often seen by many who perhaps aren't quite familiar with Buddhist teachings, with Buddhist practice. It's often seen as harsh or depressing or nihilistic in its views. People will hear some of the Buddhist teachings and they'll think, well, that sounds pretty depressing. That sounds kind of uncomfortable. Wow, they're really nihilistic in the way they approach things or the way they see things. And this can be a very common view when we've been telling ourselves these stories to avoid reality, to avoid what is true. What is true in the world, what is true in our lives. We often prefer, again, to willfully look away from reality or truth in order to kind of placate ourselves with these stories, with these ideas. We anesthetize ourselves and keep ourselves blissfully unaware and stuck in this dream world that we have created, this story, this narrative that we've created. We prefer to remain stuck in that story, in that narrative. There are many different words, I think, that can be used to describe Zen practice. We're asked for a word that describes what is Zen practice about. There are many different words I think we can use. You often hear us talk about investigation or inquiry. Zen practice, the practice of Zazen, is about investigating. It is about inquiring who we are, what is true in our lives. We can talk about stillness. Many people will describe Zen practice as cultivating this stillness, stillness of the heart and mind. And those are all appropriate descriptions. But there's another word that I feel is very appropriate in describing Zen practice, what Zen practice is. And that word is reality. Reality. Zen is about encountering and understanding what is real, who we are, what this life is, what is it really, who are we really. So Zen practice is often about reality. The Buddha was said to have taught that there are 84,000 Dharma gates. Sensei spoke last week about the gateless gate, the gates of Zen. And so the Buddha taught that there are 84,000 Dharma gates. What does this mean? This typically means the Buddha was saying that there are innumerable ways or paths, gates, if you will, to enlightenment or to liberation, to realization, to understanding. There are many different paths, many different gates, not just one, but there are many different gates to encounter reality as it is. And so tonight, I want to touch just a little bit on one of those teachings, one of those Dharma gates, which is traditionally known as the Five Remembrances. This is a very foundational teaching in Buddhism. You don't often encounter it, or perhaps not often enough in Zen practice, but it is a foundational teaching in Buddhist practice. And so there are numerous Dharma teachings, numerous Dharma gates, again, that can really be said to be a complete distillation of the Buddhist teachings. These include the Noble Eightfold Path, the Three Dharma Seals, the Six Paramitas, and of course, our Bodhisattva precepts, which we practice and we actualize in our Zen practice. All of these teachings can be said to be a complete distillation of the Buddhist teachings. And so too it is with the Five Remembrances. The Five Remembrances are another teaching that can really be said to be a complete distillation of the Buddhist teachings, the essence of the Buddhist teachings. They contain the essence of the Buddha's foundational teachings. They point to the Four Noble Truths, and they point directly to the Three Dharma Seals that we talk about, these qualities, these seals that apply to each and every one of us. And those three Dharma seals being impermanence, no self, and suffering or dissatisfaction. The five remembrances are really a wake-up call. They're a wake-up call to reality, to what is real and what is true for each and every one of us without exception. And so these, in understanding these five remembrances, in embracing these remembrances, we're able to find freedom or liberation, as Mark Nepo pointed out in that opening reading. He talked about becoming lost in that darkness when we avoid reality, when we run away from reality, but how we find liberation and freedom when we embrace the truth of our lives, the truth of life itself, the reality of life itself. And so these five remembrances first appear in a sutra called the Upajatana Sutra. And I'll read these five remembrances, what the five remembrances are. Number one, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape aging. Number two, I am of the nature to have ill health. I cannot escape illness. Number three, I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. Number four, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And number five, my actions are my only true possessions. I inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. These are the five remembrances. And I'll read them again with a slightly different translation. This is one of Thich Nhat Hanh's translations of these same five remembrances. So once again, number one, I am subject to aging. There is no way to avoid aging. Number two, I am subject to ill health. There is no way to avoid illness. Number three, I am going to die. There is no way to avoid death. Number four, everyone and everything that I love will change, and I will be separated from them. And number five, my only true possessions are my actions, and I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are my continuation. These are the five remembrances. And I know everyone's thinking, wow, what a downer, right? What a downer. These five remembrances, they sound so bleak. They sound so bleak. But the five remembrances, again, are a wake-up call for each and every one of us of our true nature, of our reality, reality as it is, as it applies to each and every one of us. And we work with the five remembrances. The beauty of them, I think, is that this is not just a teaching, a conceptual teaching, an idea. This is really a practice that I offer to each and every one of you. The five remembrances are a practice. Because the five remembrances are something that we can work with each and every day. And we work with the five remembrances by reciting them, perhaps memorizing them like a mantra, but most of all, by simply observing them, being present to them, observing them in our daily life. They are like an affirmation in a sense, but an affirmation of what is real in our lives, not a story that we have created to avoid our reality, but of what is real. And the five remembrances often, again, might sound harsh. They might sound bleak to us when we hear them. They may seem very pessimistic. They may seem nihilistic to us upon first hearing them. But the question to investigate really is, why do they seem so pessimistic to us? Why do they seem so bleak to us when they speak of an absolute fundamental truth that applies to each and every one of us? In 2019 was a difficult year for me. In 2019, I went through one of the most difficult times in my life. Both of my parents passed away in 2019, and they passed away just 3 weeks apart. On the day that we buried my mother, we received a call. My father, who was very ill and bedridden and could not even be there for my mother's funeral. After burying my mother, we received a call, my brother and I, basically telling us that our father had taken a turn for the worse, was not doing well, and that they did not expect him to last very long. This is on the very day that we had just buried my mother. And so I lost my parents just 3 weeks apart in 2019. And after that loss, as I was experiencing this grief, this pain, my Dharma brother Genjo reached out to me. He sent me a message reminding me of the five remembrances. He sent me a message and he told me to remember my practice, to turn to my practice as I went through this difficult time. And he told me to remember the five remembrances, to recall, to go back to what I know is real, and to be with that without denying what is real. And some might feel that that's a pretty bleak thing to turn to when you're going through such a difficult moment. But on the contrary, it was a reminder of what is true and real for each and every one of us. This understanding that all of those five remembrances apply to me, they apply to my parents, they apply to each and every one of us. And so this was actually a beautiful reminder to turn to my practice, to turn to what is real, to not cover my eyes and pretend that I could not see the reality that was right in front of me, but rather to open my eyes and to be fully present to it. There's another sutra, the Devadutta Sutra, which also points to the five remembrances. And this is an interesting look at them because it points to the five remembrances from a slightly different viewpoint, from the viewpoint of bearing witness to these remembrances. And in the Devadutta Sutra, it speaks of, there's a conversation that takes place, and it talks about the five Deva messengers, or the five divine messengers. These divine messengers, these five divine messengers that we should bear witness to, that show up in our lives on a daily basis. And they point to the true reality of this precious human existence for each and every one of us. And these five divine messengers are the following. It says that number one, the first divine messenger is a newborn baby or infant. A newborn baby or infant. I think all of us have experienced being around a newborn baby or an infant, a newborn infant. We see this precious, beautiful human life coming into the world. I think everyone is moved when they see a baby, particularly a newborn baby. Everyone is moved in the presence of a baby, this precious human life just coming into the world. It is a reminder for each and every one of us of this precious human birth, this precious opportunity that we have. But it's also a reminder of impermanence and change, because as we look at a baby, at a newborn baby, we know that when each and every one of us is born into the world, each one of us is impermanent. We know that we are going to continue to change, and we continue from the moment that we're born into the world, we move closer and closer to leaving the world, to death. And so we're reminded of this by this divine messenger of a newborn baby. The second divine messenger is an old person, a senior, if you will. This too reminds us of impermanence, and it reminds us of the fragility of this human life, of this human existence. When we see someone who is older, when we see an older person, and especially someone who perhaps is beginning to sh really show the physical signs of aging, sometimes the mental sides of aging, we can look at an older person and know that this too is me. This is me. I too will age. I too am of the nature to grow old, and we cannot escape growing old. And so when we look at an older person, when we encounter an older person, We are to look upon them as a divine messenger, for they remind us that we too are of the nature to grow old. We too are of the nature of impermanence. The third divine messenger is a person suffering from illness or disease. When we come across or come face to face with someone who is going through illness or disease, this too is a divine messenger because it reminds us of the delicateness and the suffering, the discontentment of human life. And again, we are all of the nature to get sick, to be ill, to experience ill health in our lives. Now, some are more fortunate than others. We may go for many, many years without experiencing any extreme illness. But illness, ill health, disease is something that really can affect each and every one of us. All of us are of the nature to become ill at some point in our lives, perhaps at various points in our lives. And certainly the older we get, the more we begin to experience this. I'm beginning to feel those effects currently. I feel them in my knees. I feel them in other parts of my body, how the body begins to wear down. And so when we encounter this divine messenger, someone who is going through illness, who is going through disease, once again, we are reminded this too is me. I am of the nature to get sick. I am of the nature to experience ill health, and I cannot escape that in my lifetime. Number four is a person who has died, someone who has passed away, someone who has transitioned from this life. Once again, this is a divine messenger that reminds us that each and every one of us is of the nature of impermanence. Each one of us will die eventually. We don't know when. We don't know when that will happen, but we know that each one of us will experience death. We will die. And so when we encounter a person who has died, whether it's someone that's close to us, whether it's someone who perhaps we don't know as well, but this is a divine messenger who reminds us of this impermanence of life and that we too are of the nature to die, that we cannot escape this life without death. Death is a part of life. And finally, the fifth divine messenger, and this is one that perhaps has changed over the course of time, but essentially, it's a person who is suffering the negative consequences or punishment for unwholesome actions or choices in their life. This was often described as perhaps someone who a criminal or someone who has broken the law and is suffering the punishment for that. But given our current times, and I work in the criminal justice system, and so I can tell you that there is often not a lot of justice happening. And so this is one that has changed over the course of time. But a person who is suffering in some way or another the negative consequences of unwholesome actions or choices. This one, of course, is a divine messenger that speaks to us about karma, about cause and effect, about our actions, our choices, the actions that we take, the choices that we make in our lives. We are reminded that what we do, what each and every one of us does, matters in the world. Everything that we do, every action that we take, every choice that we make has consequences. It has ripple effects. Those consequences can be positive, they can be wholesome and beneficial, or they can be unwholesome and unbeneficial. And so we're reminded that our actions matter and that they have consequences, and therefore we should always be attentive and aware of our actions and our choices. And these five remembrances, the first three, I'm of the nature to grow old. I am of the nature to have ill health or to experience ill health. And I am of the nature to die. These three, really, you can see how they point to the Buddha's own story. Shakyamuni Buddha's own story, how he encountered in his quest before becoming the Buddha, he encountered these forms of suffering, these forms of discontentment. It is what had essentially set him on his journey of discovery, of enlightenment, that he experienced old age, sickness, death. And he wanted to find if there was liberation from this suffering, from this discontentment, from this dissatisfaction that we all experience. The fourth, I am of the nature to change, that everyone and everything that is dear to me is of the nature of change. And there is no way to escape being separated from them in one form or another. All that I know, all that I love, all that is dear to me, one day I will be separated from it. Either I will die or those close to me will die. But in one way or another, I will be separated from those things because each and every one of us is of the nature of change. And this reminds us of the Buddhist teaching of impermanence and change, that everything is constantly changing. Everything is of the constant nature of flow and change. And the fifth, that my actions are my only true possessions, that I inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. Once again, this reminds us of the teaching of karma. This reminds us of the Dharma seal of no self. Because each and every one of us needs to understand that all of our actions affect others. Our actions matter because they affect others. We are infinitely connected with all beings and with all life. The notion that the choices that I make or the actions that I take only affect me. If I take an unwholesome action, if I make a choice that is not wholesome or that is not of benefit, I cannot expect that that will only have repercussions for me, that it will only have consequences for me. This is a lie. This is a story that we tell ourselves to avoid the reality that we are connected with all beings and with all life, and that our actions have consequences that we cannot know. We cannot know. Our actions have ripple effects. And often we cannot know and we cannot see what those effects are. And so to be diligent in our attentiveness, our awareness of our actions is essential because we know that our actions affect others. And we can either have a very positive and beneficial impact on others and on the world, or we can have a very negative impact on others and the world around us when we are not attentive to our actions. When we forget this truth that our actions are our only real possessions, that they are the ground on which I stand, they are my continuation, what I leave behind in the world. And so these five remembrances, far from being a teaching that is pessimistic, that is nihilistic, that is bleak, that is dark, it's really a teaching that reminds us of the preciousness of life. It reminds us of the preciousness of this human life, of this human existence. We're meant to bear witness rather than to look away from or to ignore these remembrances, these divine messengers in our daily life. Far from being harsh, they are a wake-up call to what is real. They are ultimate truths of this delicate, this fragile, and ever-changing, precious human existence. They are not telling us, don't bother with life, don't bother with people. Because everyone's going to grow old, everyone's going to die, everything's going to change. I'm going to be separated from all that I love, from all those that I love. On the contrary, they are telling us, appreciate your life, appreciate all that you love, appreciate all those that you love, because they are of the nature to grow old. They are of the nature to change. They are of the nature to die. You are of the nature to grow old. You are of the nature to experience ill health. You are of the nature to die. And you will be separated at one point or another. Appreciate this precious life. Be fully present to this precious life and to all that you love. be fully present to it. Because we are only here in this precious life for a certain period of time. We cannot know how long. We cannot know how much time we have. And so each and every moment, we should remember these five remembrances and appreciate all that we have, all that we love, all that is dear to us, knowing that they are impermanent and that they will change, that we are impermanent and that we will change. And so they are re a reminder for us. This practice of the five remembrances, they are a reminder for us to live fully, to love unconditionally, to act compassionate and skillfully in our lives, and to give of ourselves generously. Now, in this moment, in each and every moment that we have, we're encouraged to do this now, in this precious and fleeting lifetime. To remember these and to act skillfully now. The Dharma, as we've often said, is not something to believe in. These Dharma teachings are not something for you to believe in. They are something for you to do, something for each of us to do. They are not dogma. They are not doctrine. They are not for us to believe in them or not believe in them. They are something for us to do, to act skillfully in each moment. To live fully in each moment. The remembrances are a reminder to know, to truly know the self, as Dogen said, to forget the self and to become intimate with the 10,000 things, with all things, which includes you and I and all the many beings. We are the 10,000 things. And to know the self, to forget the self, is to become intimate with all life. And so the question is, can we bear witness to, can we embrace this truth, this reality, without creating those stories to cover up or to bypass that reality of our lives, what is real in our lives? These five remembrances are not just my five remembrances. They're not your five remembrances. They are our five remembrances. They apply to each and every one of us. They are ultimate truth for each and every one of us. And so I invite each one of us to work with these five remembrances, to practice these five remembrances on a daily basis. Recall them, bring them to mind, bear witness to those divine messengers that show up in our life each and every day throughout our lives. Practice these five remembrances with everyone, with everything that we encounter in our daily lives. My teacher often used to say, the Zen masters of old would say, if not now, when? If not now, when? When we put off these truths by creating stories to cover up reality. It's like we're failing to truly live our lives. If not now, when? These five remembrances are now. They're in each successive moment of now, of this precious life.